Welcome to the Legends Among Us podcast. My name is Chaplain Jason Phipps. It is Thanksgiving week. We just wrapped up all of our turkey bowls here in 3CR, and it is, 1340? It's about the end of the day. People are leaving, but we have one more thing going on today, and that is an interview with Drew Rabina from Fort Hood Range Ops. And the reason that he is here today is because Drew has some stories to tell. I'm sure you do, Drew, about Thunder Squadron.
I do, definitely.
Okay, good. Well, Drew, just to give you a little background, Drew was with Thunder Squadron for 10 years, from 2013 to 2023, had three deployments, finished out his time there, and you retired as well as like the squadron master gunner.
Yes, yeah, so I was squadron master gunner when I retired in June 2023.
Awesome. We've had an opportunity to get to know each other at St. George Chapel, and it's been great to have you serving with us there. But I would love for today just to hear a little bit about your experience in Thunder. Obviously, we have a lot of veterans in addition to troopers that listen to the show, so there's a lot of people who may know who you are and may be able to identify, if you will, but confirm some of the stories that you share. But really, I would just love to hear your perspective as a veteran of 3rd Cavalry Regiment with 10 years of time in the regiment and in Thunder Squadron, to talk a little bit about your experiences, since we're kind of dealing with a new generation of combat operations, but just a new generation of troopers.
Yeah, and thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
I'm sure I'll have something hopefully interesting to talk about.
I believe you will, Drew. But before we get into the details of your time there, can you just give for the listening audience a little bit of background, what your time has been like in the Army?
So I joined the Navy first. I was in the Navy from 99 to 2003, and I was an aviation electronics technician. I fixed radars and airplanes. I had the privilege of deploying in the Navy. We deployed September 19th, 2001, actually. Interestingly, I was in the North Arabian Sea when the USS Kitty Hawk brought the special operations units and actually dropped them. So I actually had the immense privilege of serving in the military during the entirety of the Afghan War. I was relieved that it was actually ended by the time my career was done. So I was actually there in the North Arabian Sea on the USS Theodore Roosevelt, a little over 6 month of rotation, and we dropped 4 million pounds of ordnance in 4.5 months in Afghanistan, which at the time was a Navy record, and we spent 159 consecutive days at sea. Anyway, so I got out of the Navy because I really wasn't fulfilled, and I wanted to do something else. So when I joined the military, you know, there wasn't going to ever be a war again. We had solved all of the world's problems. The Soviet Union had fallen. Clinton was president. Everything was great. Never going to be a problem again. And so that wasn't true. But I had always envisioned myself being more of a rifleman kind of guy. And I joined the Navy because I wanted a technical job. But I actually, at this point, I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So I ended up getting out of the Navy. And then after a little while, I decided I didn't like being a civilian either.
So you had a break in service.
About two years. Okay. I tried being a civilian. I didn't like it. So I decided to join the Army, and I joined the Army. I came in under an 18 X-ray contract because I wanted airborne, and that was like the only way I could get airborne guaranteed. But I did that, and then I ended up in the 82nd Airborne Division for 5 years, and I deployed twice with the 82nd Airborne Division. Then in 2010, I went to Germany in the 128th SIB, 228 Black Lions of Canton, deployed with them to Afghanistan, and then came here and then deployed three times here, twice to Afghanistan, once to Iraq.
And what were those? What was the length of those rotations?
My first rotation, which was a surge rotation in 2006, we were in the 82nd, we were in Baghdad. It was the 1st and 504th Parachute Infantry Regiment. We were in Baghdad for 15 months. We were actually the first unit tapped for the surge because we were on GRF. We had done squad live fire before we went. Okay. You know what I mean? That's as far as our training rotation had gone.
Yeah.
And then we went, not fully prepared in that way. But that's the 82nd, you know what I mean? And you were Rangers, so you obviously you understand that, oh, it's time to go. You're always ready.
Yeah. Yeah, so your two D-bags packed.
Yeah, you're always ready. So we were on GRF, so we didn't take Christmas leave. We were going to take leave after the Christmas break. So for Christmas Eve, we did a run. Christmas Eve morning, and we were supposed to get released, you know, basically right after that. And then Colonel Alex, who was our commander at the time, he, so we're all there, and the 2nd Battalion is over there, and they're getting their brief, and they're all like, hey, we're going home. And Colonel Alex comes out, and he's like, oh, well, I got some good news, and I got some bad news. The good news is you guys better learn Arabic right now, because in the next 6 or 7 days, we're going to be in Iraq. I was in Kuwait December 31st. No, January 2nd, I was in Kuwait. We started leaving December 3rd. Right. Like, we spent all day packing Connexes, Christmas Eve. You know what I mean? They finally let us go home so we could enjoy Christmas before, you know, we started getting real serious. The whole unit was deployed within like 15 days after notice. And then, you know, we spent a little time in Kuwait trying to figure out where the heck we were going. And then we were in Baghdad. And that was definitely my most kinetic deployment. So we had a lot of action. Our main area of operation was the three main markets in Baghdad. And we did, so our JSS, where we mainly patrolled out of, was at the intersection of Round Irish and Haifa Street. So it was quite peaceful and friendly there, as you can imagine.
There's probably some people who are listening who know exactly what you're describing.
Oh, I'm sure they are, you know?
Yes.
One road you can drive on because you get blown up, and the other road you can walk on because you get shot. So, and that's right at the corner, right at that intersection is where our battalion did its main operations out of, our company specifically. We came back, and then a year later, we deployed much more out in the middle of nowhere. That deployment was very quiet, a little copy-baity, again with the 82nd. Then I went to Germany, deployed there. I went to Cops Iraq. I don't know if you've ever heard of that lovely place. It was very austere. It didn't have any bathrooms or running water or anything. Yeah. So you were using wag bags for a year.
My
15 months, a year. Now I'm remembering your question. 15 months, a year.
Yep.
A year. And then my 3 rotations with here were 9 months.
And when you got to 3CR, how did those rotations compare to what you'd experienced in the 82nd?
The surge was obviously more kinetic than the other rotations we did. Ziroc was that deployment was represented Pektika province. We used to joke, you can tell who's not in the Taliban at Pektika because they're alive. if they're alive, they're in the Taliban.
Okay.
Because they'd be driving down the road. You'd see them leave. We'd be in our little camp on top of the mountain.
Yeah.
Which there wasn't any flat ground there, really. Just Mars. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And beautiful country. And they'd be driving, and you'd see the cars driving, and they'd get to an intersection, and you'd see them drive off the road, go all the way around the intersection, come back around again, and we'd mark it on a map. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And we'd just watch, just the signs of life of the village, because we were overlooking a village in the Naga Valley. But that's mainly what we were doing there, just keeping the peace in the area. A year before then, somebody had tried to overrun our comp. Our OP, they got attacked, like they tried to overrun it 3 or 4 times. I mean, they didn't do very well because they had to go up a mountain.
Right.
The OP, it's not a winning strategy, especially when you're going up against 50 and Mark 19 pointed down at you. But they did that. The first deployment I did with 3CR, with Thunder Squadron, it was the Logar deployment. So we were at Shank and Rocket City. So, I mean, that wasn't new. Just getting rocketed constantly because that's what happened there. So we did that. And we did a lot of patrols out of Shank to the area like Barak and so forth around there, which we got into one substantial firefight. Almost got in a couple others. Could have been more effective. At that time, it was very partner-driven. So we were relying on having to have the Afghans participating as equal partners.
Okay. So ANA was embedded with you all.
As much as possible, right?
Right.
So we'd go out and meet ANA, and you know, if they weren't there, that was a sign that something was going to happen. And if they were there, that was a sign that something wasn't going to happen.
Okay.
That's kind of how that one went. So we didn't get a lot of action. But it was interesting. We did a lot of patrolling and stuff. I got a lot of great stories from that. The point, I had a lot of really good soldiers. I was E5 promotable during a lot of that. So they wanted me as help as a battle NCO because I was older. And honestly, because we were in Afghanistan, I understand. Because, I was prior service Navy. And then there was, I was 20 when I joined the Navy. So I was already on the older end. So, and they were like, okay, there's younger guys that should be humping around. But anyway, one of those younger guys got hurt like instantly. So I ended up replacing him as a team leader. which I had already had the team leader thing really figured out by then. So I did really good. And I was mostly just waiting on points for a lot of that deployment because the points were maxed out for that whole time for Staff Sergeant. I was never really worried about being promoted all that much. It was never a driving force for me. My dream job was to be a squad leader. Mm. And once I got that job, I was like, I love my life. This is perfect. I remember being at Joe and I'd see the squad leader. I'd be like, he's the greatest job in the world. I wouldn't want to be a platoon sergeant. He's got too much responsibility. He's got to worry about all kinds of problems that the squad leader just doesn't. He's like that sweet spot where he doesn't have too much BS, but he has enough control and has a lot of effect on what's going on. But he's still with the men directly. And I really liked that. And when I became a squad leader, I really loved my job. It was sad when I had to leave.
You came from an airborne unit and went to what was at the time an armored cavalry regiment. So you had tanks and Bradleys, presumably, during that time. Right? Transition already taken place.
So yeah, we were already strikers when I got here.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah, so I went from the 82nd and then I went to Germany. And that was like a light unit, so there's not much change. Other than I had to learn how to use my patrol cap there. We went out to the field, and my squad leader's like, where's your patrol cap? And I'm like, my what? Your patrol cap? Where's your patrol cap? My leg hat? You wear those? You know what I mean? Yeah. And then they had snivel gear and stuff like that, and I was like, what? And they were like putting on their Gore-Tex jackets. I pulled mine out of the plastic for the first time ever. And I put it on, and they're like, you can't wear that. You don't have rank. These have rank? You know what I mean? This is crazy. Like, you actually wear this stuff?
And you're not shaming people for wearing them either.
This is insane. Yeah. When I was in the 82nd, if I wanted to wear something warm, I had to hide it. No. You know?
Couldn't wear gloves.
No. Gloves. Yeah. Oh, snivel gear. No. Yeah. You had to hide that under your uniform top and tuck it away so nobody could see it.
Nobody could see it.
Unless it was nighttime, then you get away a little bit more.
Right. Okay, so my big question for you is, 10 years, obviously, there's going to be a shift in the culture that you perhaps observed. What did you see from 2013 to 2023?
I got to say, when I got to Thunder Squadron in 2013, they just made the transition into being a striker unit. So they'd gone away from the Bradleys and stuff. Everybody was already replaced when I got here. So I didn't have like holdovers from the Bradley area. There were some like leaders,
but all the 19 like, series guys were gone.
Yeah, all my guys were infant like this. I was in an infantry unit. Interestingly, at this time, you might not be aware of this, the troop names were different. Somehow they got messed up. So like what's Ironhawk Troop in Thunder was Grim Troop at the time. Yeah, and they fixed it later. It's because they did something wrong with the HHCs or something like that.
Okay.
When the infantry guys took over, they kind of butchered the naming convention, and it had to get corrected later. And so at the time, it was Grim Troop, which is now Ironhawk Troop.
Okay.
And like everybody that was there when that transition happened called it Grimhawk for a long time. But so it was in Grim Troop, which is now Ironhawk. So we had all the infantry guys had already kind of come in. Interestingly, this unit, comparatively to other units, generally has a fairly high esprit de corps thing going on. I've noticed that, like, compared to other units I've seen, and on units I've been worked with or been in, and, like, the 228 was the example. Obviously, 82nd had amazing esprit de corps. That's all that is. It's funny, because when you leave there, you're like, wow, we really liked that place, didn't we?
Yeah.
You got to drink the Kool-Aid there. It was lower. It's something that grew back, because you had the old guys that were like, wow, we're like, you know, an elite Bradley unit. And then the Bradleys went away. And then you had these infantry guys, and you got the Stetsons, and you got all the cavalry specific stuff. No blue flags, no blue. And so there was kind of a identity crisis that a lot of the new soldiers were having, and all of the NCOs were coming from infantry units. And you know anything about infantry culture? Well, we don't like anybody that's not us. And we don't like things that aren't infantry. We want our blue flags with the crossed rifles on them. We want the, you know, Stetsons. Stetsons are, interestingly, when I looked back, it's funny, I always thought that they were selling the unit wrong. They were selling it as a cavalry unit, but it's not a cavalry unit. It's a unit of mounted riflemen. Infantry who ride horses. They're dragoons. They're not cavalry. So you had these guys that were like cavalry guys that like in the leadership, and they're trying to sell it as this cavalry thing to a bunch of infantry. And the infantry guys are like, I don't care. Right. like I don't want to be a cavalryman. I want to be an infantryman. That's what I want to be. It's interesting because once you got some of those guys to see that, the history of these is actually more similar to what infantry really is anyway, where they're fighting on foot. They're not on horseback. They ride the horses there and then fight on foot, much like the modern unit does. Right. That's the whole concept.
Yeah, right? Mounted and dismounted.
Yeah, yeah, you know, and you know, that's great stuff. When I got here, there was nobody mentioned Patton. This is a squadron commander for Thunder Squadron and the regimental commander. Some leaders, you know, they were trying to do the right thing, of course, but, you know, I don't think they understood the injury. And over time, though, it changed. And that changed in the units, at least for my experience. Like Grim Troop, through the training, especially when we deployed, that's when we got, like, a massive boost in these things. When the guys got to do what they wanted to do, and they realized what they were doing, and we got a pretty substantive firefight at Baraki Brock around the Taliban condos. I don't know if you know where that is or anything. There's these compounds in Baraki Brock that were called the Taliban condos. There's a lot of bad guys that live there. It's like a very heavily defended kind of place. Mm-hmm. And we were operating around there down the little Logar River and stuff, and we got ambushed. That kind of stuff like built a lot of unit pride and stuff.
Right.
And then, of course, we also had a lot of success at NTC. Mm-hmm. I don't know why, but like Thunder Squadron, when I was in, I'm sure it's still that way because, I mean, I just saw the guys training at Crittenburg, and they were doing great. I mean, they were tearing those targets up. Like I do maintenance out there, and those targets are shredded. Mm-hmm. Much better than other units. Yeah. It's very happy to say, yeah, that's my old unit that did this. Cool. You know what I mean?
Good.
I didn't have to be like, oh, yeah, they suck now. You know what I mean? I was like, well, yes. Targets were all shredded and stuff. So very happy about that. That's continued, and I'm happy about that. But, I mean, we did, like, great at NTC. Fantastic. I mean, the first rotation we did was still, like, a coin kind of rotation at NTC, sure. So that doesn't really count. But we did great. But after that, we went back into more conventional style, near-peer ideas. And we always did really good. I mean, we had Captain Body for my second NTC rotation. And that guy, he was really smart. And, like, so we had really good, I know my troop especially, we had really good company commanders. And we had really good first sergeants and really good NCOs. Like, we had a lot of really good NCOs over those years, obviously contributing to the success of the unit. And with Captain Body, we had First Sergeant Young, who later became Sergeant Major Young. Great NCO. Can't say enough good things about him, honestly. But that NCC rotation, I mean, we went as a, we actually went as an Op 4 rotation and then did the NCC rotation a little later, just a Grim Troop. And I mean, we murdered First Kev. We walked down the John Wayne Pass overnight, like just traversed that overnight. And we got there in the morning and their formation, we annihilated them with javelins. Like, they woke up, and their whoopee lights started going off all over the place. They couldn't do anything about it. They were just running around in circles and were just smoking them. Stuff like that. So we had a lot of success. And those successes built an internal esprit de corps that was really good. And by the time I left, you know, the culture shifted quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, the only real problem we had, and I think it kind of made things better in the long run, was when the I consider it like the great purge of the SFAB, purge, because they stole so many good NCOs from across the combat unit just because they were looking for quality NCOs and they were doing tryouts. And obviously the promise of greener pastures and easier living lured many a great NCO in their direction.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we hollowed out some of the key positions, especially right around COVID time and stuff. That was a really rough time in the Army in general. And then leadership-wise, after that, it stumbled a little bit for a little while to get our footing back again. But once we did, everything was fine again. Just, some people had to accelerate their learning a little bit. And once they did, it was good. But there was a knowledge gap between COVID and all of these key NCOs leaving to go to ASVAB units and stuff like that. There was a knowledge gap that kind of like ballooned.
Do you feel like we are moving back towards having a better NCO core within Thunder Squadron, or maybe even within 3CR itself, based upon your observations.
Yes. I was very impressed with how they acquitted themselves out in the field this past time. But even while he was still in, everything was moving in the right direction. It was a stumbling point in general, and those happen. And again, I think in the long run, it might have been better because some of those people had to grow fast. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that kind of pressure builds good leaders. And some people did grow into being very good leaders and filled big shoes that they probably would have taken much longer to have to grow into. We were still very successful. So, I mean, it worked. I mean, we were able to make it work. It was just painful here and there. Like when we did gunnery right after COVID, and I was the master gunner at the time. And we just got a lot of new platoon sergeants because of the COVID problem that we didn't do gunnery. We had a very, very, very few experienced gunners. And we got new platoon sergeants, and those platoon sergeants mostly came from light units. So their experience in the 50 cals and the Mark 19s and the RWS and the Striker in general was not there, not good enough. So I was literally out there like teaching people one-on-one with crews and stuff. It was very painful. From a work standpoint, and looking back, it was very rewarding. That's one of the things I liked about being master gunners. I got to train soldiers, and I enjoyed that. I got to spend a lot of time with soldiers on top of trucks, troubleshooting guns, and working with them and teaching them stuff. But you know, there's a lot of knowledge gap when you had these a lot of experienced NCOs that went to SFAB units, so you lost that experience,
yep.
And then you have new guys that replace them from other places that don't have the experience, and then the Joes. Soldiers that had the experiences, a lot of them left. It was rough. It was a rough year. And once we got past the year, it got better. And then it got better. And it got better. By the end, we were better than we'd ever been, I think, in a lot of respects. I mean, my last training cycle we did was really successful. Everything went really smoothly. And it looks like they got things still figured out pretty good. So I was pretty happy with that.
Good.
They went through that two modifier with nothing. I mean, they have a great commander. Colonel McKenzie used to be my XO.
Okay. He was in Thunder.
Yes, he was my XO for a while.
Thunder XO.
And he's awesome. Probably the smartest guy I've met in the Army. I don't want to fluff him up too much, but...
Yeah. He is very cerebral. I've noticed talking to him, having interactions with him. Super smart guy.
If you ever want to get him riled up, tell him how much you love the book on killing.
Oh, that'll get him
riled up, super riled up. We've talked about
it. He was trying to write like a counterpoint.
Yes, he was working on that. I don't know how far he got with that.
Yeah.
But I'll have to talk to him about it sometime. But anybody listening to this, you really want to rile him up, talking about how much you love that book.
Well, Drew, tell me, how has 10 years in one organization, because there's very few people in the military that have experienced that, unless you're like in Ranger Regiment or something like that.
82nd, too. Same kind of thing. It's rare.
But 10 years of consistent time, how has that impacted you as a human being? Obviously, you stayed out here in Texas.
So it's weird because I spent the first several years trying to leave. Right away when I got here, you know, I mean, I did my time.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I was like, all right, I want to go move on to something else.
Yep.
And then because of deployments and I just ended up not for whatever reason. And then I ended up going to Master Gunner School. Once you go to Master Gunner School, they're going to hold on to you as long as they can.
Sure.
And then after a while, they start asking, do you want to go anywhere? And, you know, after like 5.5, 6 years, it's like, not really. I'm fine here. And it was great because my kids got to grow up here. Central Texas area is really quite nice, honestly. I mean, unfortunately, I'm sure there's a lot of young soldiers that just rolled their eyes that I just said that. But honestly, it is a nice area. Not right outside the gate necessarily, but there's a lot more than that around. You know, we did end up staying here, and a lot of that has to do with the installation being here and obviously the opportunities that being a retiree and having the major installation nearby and just having that connection. I mean, I spent 22 years in the military, obviously. I don't feel like moving too far away. You know, I mean,
done with that life.
The whole time you're in, you want to get out, but the whole time you're out, you want to be in because you only remember the good stuff. I mean, obviously, Army, like 22 years of a lot of it was painful, a lot of it was stressful, but so much of it was so great.
Sure.
And I like to complain about my time in the Army would be very disingenuous. I don't think anything has done me as good. I'm going to try to talk my son to join.
It has been a 22-year formative shaping experience.
Well, yeah, and you know, I spent all my adult life essentially fighting a war. you can't get too far from that. I guess some people can, but I can't. That's why I got a job in range control, because I like sitting there and watching things happen and helping people and stuff like that, and sharing my experience with some of the younger lieutenants and stuff there in the tower, helping them orchestrate their training a little bit, maybe giving them some pointers here and there, which is nice. But just being a part of it still is really nice. And being part of Fort Hood, it's weird because I've been here so long. It's like, you know, my hometown now, basically. When I got out, I mean, I did want to move away, but, you know, this seemed ended up being the best option. And obviously, anywhere in the military that I was, not going to lie, this wasn't my favorite duty station. That was Grafenwöhr, Germany.
Right, we talked about that a little bit on Sunday.
So beautiful. So lovely.
Sure.
I wish I could have stayed there the rest of my life, honestly.
Yeah. Well, you kind of got cheated out of this.
Out of 6 months of it, but my wife didn't want to stay there and stuff.
Sure.
The language barrier was a lot for her.
Yep.
Of course, the whole time we're there, she's like, I can't wait to go back to America. And we finally did. And then 6 months later, she's like, I wish I was in Germany still. It was so nice. And it was nice. I mean, loved being there.
Yeah.
But I mean, I loved being here. You know, Texas is, it's Texas. I mean, like, where else would you want to be? The property tax thing with for disabled veterans was a big deal.
It is a great incentive to stay here. Well, Drew, as we kind of get close to wrapping this up, one of the final questions, really kind of the final question I have for you is, in a spirit of optimism, we exist in a very pessimistic world, and certainly the Army is no exception to that. It's almost an epicenter of pessimism and frustration. But to counter that with a spirit of optimism, if somebody were to come here voluntarily or involuntarily to 3CR, what would you do to obviously share truths about the organization with them, but to cast it in such a way that they can see it as you're contributing to the greater mission of defending freedom through this organization versus like you're just coming here to suffer?
You know, it's interesting because I remember when I'm master gunner school, I went to master gunner school, and there's a random guy who walked up to me and he saw my 3CR patch, his Brave Rifles, and kind of tapped me and walked off. That was the first time that ever happened to me. It was really cool, but he was like, Brave Rifles, you know. This is a unique unit.
It is.
And it has an amazing history. Patton was in it. Wild Bill Hickok was like a scout for 3CR. I mean, we're mentioned in the Army song going up San Juan Hill. Like we did that. We followed Teddy Roosevelt and the Rough Riders up under squadron. I'm just sitting around there. But did that. We're one of the oldest continuous units in the history of the Army. And that's an amazing legacy. The problem I think is, you know, you go to the 82nd and the Rangers and special operations units and stuff, they beat the drum of history. And people want to be in the 101st because they saw Band of Brothers and that was cool. You have to remind people, one, those aren't the only units that did cool stuff. And we have to build esprit de corps through people wanting to be here based off of the past. Like the carrying the torch thing was a big deal in the 82nd. You're carrying the torch for those guys that were so awesome in the past. You don't want to let them down. You need to go out there and be the best so that when, you know, in 50, 60 years, people might talk about you the same way they talk about them. The problem is we don't talk about them enough. And I think that's what we need to do. This organization needs to is focus a lot on its history because it has a rich one. I was always confused, and don't take this the wrong way, whoever hears this, but why don't we have a statue of Patton? This seems like a guy you would expect to see. You know, he was the regimental commander, and he's the reason we have the bug patch. That's a big deal. Those are really cool things, and everybody likes Patton. It doesn't matter what MOSCR, you respect Patton. You know, every infantryman knows who Patton was and thinks he's cool. You know, those airborne guys are cool, but all they're really going to do is get the airstrip we're going to land on to actually fight the war because they're on foot. Yeah. They're just going to get left behind or die heroically. But that's 50% casualties coming in. You know that. Yeah. Expected. Acceptable. And that's just collect an airfield that somebody's going to land on. And now this unit's going to go back to Bradley's and stuff, and it's going to be more relevant than ever because you see the Russian aggression. Well, the Russians aren't going to be deterred by light infantry too much. No. They're going to be deterred much more by elite heavy infantry and elite dismounts operating with coordinated mechanized units and cavalry units. We need to focus on looking at the battles of the Gulf War and how one-sidedly awesome they were, because that's the army we need. That's the army we got to build back to. The coin army was cool. I was in that. It's cool. Do I think we could have done 76E thing? I don't know about that. That's insane. Those guys didn't stand a chance. They didn't see it happening. That kind of skill and that kind of professional lethality and the eliteness. That's what I think we need to focus on, building that kind of mentality in the soldiers, that this is the future of warfare. The future of warfare is not what your grandpa did in World War II. The future of warfare is a Bradley, which can kill tanks. And we know that. We've seen it in Ukraine. We've seen it in Desert Storm. In Desert Storm, the Russians were like, yeah, but those weren't really Russians. You know what I mean? And well, we saw in Ukraine that old Bradleys are messing those things up. That's how you win wars. Mm-hmm. That's what Europe needs. That's the deterrent against Russian aggression. And like the Chinese are just driving around cheap knockoffs of the Russian equipment with the same battle plans, which seems to be essentially they won't expect a frontal assault. And we need to be better than that. Well, the one thing I think helped me in my career as a master, especially when I get the master, I thought about this when I was a squad leader. I asked myself, am I doing a better job at preparing these soldiers than my counterpart? Am I doing the service to them to prepare them to fight those guys? And if I'm not, then I need to get out of the way. Somebody that's going to. My back, my knees got shot. That's why I never left the three shop once I got there, is because I couldn't be a platoon sergeant again or first sergeant, because there's no way I could be on the ground doing that kind of stuff. And I couldn't lead soldiers in that same way anymore. I had to get out of that way. You know what I mean? I could train soldiers, but I couldn't lead them in the same way. It would be a disservice to them. We have to understand, are we doing a better job than our counterpart? We saw when they invaded Ukraine that that's been a resounding yes. That was a very embarrassing move for them. The logistics were completely messed up. And now we know the thing to tell soldiers every time they're going to NTC and they're like, why do we have to do all this crap? Well, that way we can, if we invade somebody, we actually remember the gas and the tires and all that stuff. We know all this stuff actually works because we had to do it. And it shows that the training methodology that we developed was really good. Think about the future weapons, obviously drones and stuff, providing a whole new problem. Type of capability. Yeah, a whole new problem set to deal with. And as we deal with vehicle countermeasures, active countermeasures on vehicles and all this new technology. Right. It's still going to come down to the skill of the warfighter, though, in a lot of respects. And the skill and the dedication and how well they're trained and using whatever equipment the Army has to win that war. I think that's focusing on the eliteness and the desire to be the best, the competitive nature of the soldier, because we're all competitive type guys, especially in the combat arms group. Focusing on that is really the healthy competition. That's what we've always done, and we just need to keep doing it. And we need to avoid becoming soft, but at the same time, we can't be toxically hard either. You know what I mean? There's a balance there that has to be met.
Well, Drew, it's been great to have you on.
It's been fun.
Really appreciate your insights and your experience, and I look forward to seeing you on Sunday again.
Yes, I will be there on Sunday.
Okay, great. Well, have a great Thanksgiving.
You too.
We'll talk again.
That'd be great.
That was Drew Hrabina, works at Range Ops here at Fort Hood. Really appreciate having him on the show. That may be part one of a two-part series, because we never got around to talking about the stories he had to share regarding his time at 3CR. So have a great week as we transition into the holidays. Hopefully we'll have a few more episodes before we head off to NTC in February. Thanks for listening.